The Lollipop Guild only listens to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Do you enjoy the arts? Have an interest in art classes and meeting your local creative community? Then join us at the Athens Cultural Center on the first Friday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. View our latest exhibition over free nibbles and drinks hosted by our ACC board members. And get to know us. We are at 24 2nd Street in Athens and online at athensculturalcenter.org. We look forward to meeting you.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Garrett Roach in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for June 13th, 2024. I'm Joe Ullery. The Republican-led House has voted to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt following Hunter Biden's felony gun charge conviction. The Washington Post reports the 216-207 vote is mostly symbolic and reflects rising partisanship in Washington. Garland vowed not to be intimidated. Candidate age has received extra attention in this year's presidential race. Meanwhile, North Dakota voters this week embraced setting age limits for congressional representatives for the state. And an expert has some doubts.
In this week's primary election, 61% of voters backed a state constitutional amendment that says no one from North Dakota elected to the U.S. House or Senate can be 81 or older towards the end of their term. Elizabeth Kenzinger of Boston College's Research Group on Aging says concerns about older people holding office isn't a simple debate. She says outside of dementia, the science doesn't support the idea that an older age threshold needs to be set.
The science might suggest that there are some things that an 80-year-old might be doing better than a 60-year-old or a 40-year-old.
She says that includes being able to look at the big picture on major issues and regulating emotions more effectively. I'm Mike Moen.
The Federal Reserve has kept its key interest rate unchanged, indicating just one cut is expected by year end. CNBC reports following a two-day meeting, the Fed removed two rate cuts from its March projections. New forecasts show optimism toward inflation reaching the 2% goal, suggesting possible policy loosening later this year. Traders reacted positively, pushing the S&P 500 to a record high. State legislatures are missing a very large segment of the workforce, people from working class jobs.
Half of all Americans go to work every day in the service industry doing clerical work or in construction and other manual labor jobs, but fewer than 2% of state lawmakers have any experience in these kinds of working class jobs, according to a new report. Report co-author Nicholas Carnes of Duke University says when a broad section of the workforce is not represented, their concerns can be missed in critical policy decisions. He points to the old political saying, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
If there's a problem facing most lawyers, you can be darn sure the state legislature is going to hear about it. But if there's a problem facing working class people, our institution can miss it when we have so few work in office.
1% of Republicans and 2% of Democrats in state legislatures came from working class occupations in 2023. The report echoes warnings by Northwestern and Princeton University researchers that American democracy has become a plutocracy. While ordinary voters have virtually zero impact on national policies, those decisions are dominated by wealthy individuals and business interests. I'm Eric Galatas.
This is Public News Service.
The FDA has advised makers of the COVID-19 vaccine to formulate the next dosage to fight the quickly spreading JN1 strain of the virus.
JN1 was first discovered in the United States in September, and researchers say it's similar to previous strains, but spreads easier and faster. According to the CDC, JN1 accounted for 3.5% of cases in November. That number jumped to 85% of COVID cases in January. Texas A&M University virologist Dr. Ben Newman says getting vaccinated is still the best way to avoid getting sick.
It would be important, I would say, to get the updated vaccine as soon as it's available.
I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
Now to Connecticut, where new legislation aims to tackle the ongoing child care workforce shortage, leaving 40,000 slots unfilled. The House bill introduces the TriShare Child Care Pilot Program in New London. Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewicz says the initiative will lower child care costs. Despite providers earning just over $15 an hour, matching the national average, it falls short given the state's high living costs.
This innovative program is going to split child care expenses evenly between employee, employer, and the state to make sure that the burden is shared equitably.
The Economic Policy Institute reports infant child care costs over $15,000 annually, dropping to nearly $13,000 for a four-year-old. Bisewicz believes strengthening child care statewide will address Connecticut's broader workforce shortage, as one in five parents has quit or been fired due to child care issues. Full-time LGBTQ workers make about 90 cents for every dollar earned by the average worker in the United States. And today, LGBTQ Equal Pay Awareness Day, one Arizona organization is continuing to call for a more just and equal Arizona. Angela Huey with One Community says her organization wants to see progress. In a 2020 landmark ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court held that an employer who fires or discriminates against an individual for being gay or transgender would be in violation of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. But Huey says that only applies to businesses that have 15 or more employees.
So that means unless the business is located in one of the 11 municipalities that already has LGBTQ+ municipal ordinances in place in employment and housing and public accommodations, that it's not unlawful to discriminate against a person based on their sexual orientation. So we need to do better.
This is Joe Ullery for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Heard on interesting radio stations and your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Thursday, June 13th. Local early morning temperatures range from 44 degrees in Steventown to 53 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 60 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. Today is going to be mostly sunny and gets a bit warm. A high of 85 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight temperatures dip to 66 degrees. Dew points, yes, that magic word is back. Dew points catch up to those temperatures, so it will be room temperature, but that room is in a swamp, so air conditioners will likely be running. Tomorrow will be stormy, especially in the afternoon, and we get a high of 79 lingering most of the day. Overnight temperatures fall to 58 degrees. Dew points follow, so it will be muggy. Saturday, it's going to be dry, sunny, with a high of 75 degrees, so get out there and have some fun. Sunday, same deal, high of 78. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:57 a.m., high tide at 8:56 a.m., low tide again at 3:42 p.m., and high tide once again at 9:43 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 8:18 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:15 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are currently at 10%, although that number's been jumping around, so it might reach as far as 20% today. Plasma winds will be slow at 350 kilometers per second with a thin density of 2 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for Aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 145. And this has been The Better Weather for Thursday, June 13th, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Flags Day. When is it? Where is it? What is it all about? Can you each introduce yourselves for our listeners?
I'm Hannah Vanderkolk.
I'm EP or Elizabeth Press, and we make up 2/3 of the Flags Day collective. Angela couldn't join us this morning.
To each of you, what is your involvement in Flags Day?
As EP was mentioning, EP, Angela, and I came together to form the Flags Day Collective in 2018-2019. Troy used to have a large Flag Day celebration, a national holiday, and when it ended in 2018, we came together to offer Flags Day, adding 3 S's to the name, and so we're the primary organizers, though it's really a community event that a lot of people are involved in.
Anything you want to add, EP?
I think we'll probably get into what Flags Day itself is, but, you know, our tagline is, you know, being yourself in community, a roving party to be yourself in community. And we really look forward to this moment of celebration in the streets with our community for Flags Day and sometimes beyond.
Gotcha. So what is Flag Day, the holiday, and what is Flags Day with 3 S's? How do you differentiate them?
Well, Flag Day is a national holiday that goes way back, I think, but the a real significant change in it happened in the 1960s when there were widespread anti-war protests around the war in Vietnam, and Flag Day kind of was taken up as an anti-Vietnam War protest and was made to be pretty nationalistic and even militaristic. So that is the history of it. In Troy, it was really a large parade that a lot of people were involved in. And we think probably, we've heard, not necessarily everyone connected it to being nationalistic or militaristic, but it does have that residue with the history of where it comes from. Is that right, EP?
Yeah. And then, you know, to add on to that or to continue with the second half of your question, you know, Flag Day, the Flag Day Organizing Committee stopped that celebration in Troy in 2017. And we decided as the Flags Day Collective to, you know, still use this date, and but to expand it. So, you know, we seek to add something in terms of multiplicities and thinking beyond just the American flag and thinking about how we can celebrate in the streets being more than, you know, this patriotic war anti-dissent holiday, and sort of putting our own twist to it, bringing, you know, dissent and joy and really just thinking, you know, bigger than this and how we can enjoy each other on the streets of Troy.
And EP mentioned joy and celebration, and those are definitely big features. And I think at the same time, part of Flags Day is a kind of grieving and a space to feel into what we want to transform in locally and nationally. And at this time, that feels particularly potent with the war in Gaza and it being just very clear right now, the lengths to which the U.S. and other governments will go to use their military might. So I think it's a celebratory thing, and it's a space for us to be together in grief and, as EP said, dissent. So that's some of where we're coming from with it.
Gotcha. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and every year we sort of pick a theme that plays with this push and pull of dissent, of grieving, of mourning, of celebration, and where we sort of meet those things. And early on this year, we picked the theme of plastic. You know, the first one was about multiplicities. We had a Flags Day related to the elections. And so we are sort of, you know, this year really honing in on the idea of the theme of plastic jubilee. So we are asking people to, you know, wear their trash, make stuff from their recycling bin, find and sort of just meditate on just how much plastic is in us, around us. And so this is how we'll sort of lead with this, you know, plastic related to what Hannah said in terms of war, plastic in terms of just how it is everywhere in our environment and ourselves.
So what have been some other themes in previous years?
Our first year was focused on other species and the borderlessness of how other species live. So we really featured like bees and hummingbirds and animals that remind us that borders are human created and artificial, so that a single flag is something that's really just relevant to humans, but in the rest of the world, there's this multiplicity. And then we've done some special events, as EP mentioned, around the election in 2020. And then we have also done a kind of offshoot branch of our project that's around crows. And those are winter parades and rituals that are connected to honoring the crow population in Troy.
Gotcha. So why three S's? Tell me the story behind that.
Well, I think, you know, it's sort of like the play on being bigger than the one flag day. I don't think necessarily there is a huge significance to three, but many is important. And in some way, there's three of us organizing this as the core of the Flags Day Collective. So we landed with that as the number of extra S's for multiple flags, multiple ways of identifying.
Cool. What kind of prep goes into Flags Day? How long have you been planning?
In some ways, we're now, like, since we had our first procession in 2019, in some ways, we're always threading one to the next, and there's always some degree of preparing and thinking going on. But it shifts parade to parade how much preparation. But for this one, we had two art builds where we had people come together and work on flags and costumes. We provide some materials, we provide some templates if people don't have their own projects they're working on that they can jump in on. People of all ages have come to those. We've done those at Oakwood, we've done those at Refuge in Troy, and so this time we had two of those last week. This year we have a very exciting new thing, which is that we have a live band, which we've never had before. We've always had recorded music that we pull a sound system on a cart, and we have a 20-person brass band, Funk Rust, coming from Brooklyn, and so a lot of preparations going into coordinating with them, making sure they have places to stay and we're going to feed them and stuff like that. We also have a marshals team. So we have a crew of people that are going to help keep the procession safe, interact with the traffic. So coordinating that. And then we have a flags corps, a group of flag dancers that will be kind of at the head of the procession, helping keep the pace and helping us look cute. And yeah, what else goes into an EP?
Well, I think, you know, for us, it's really been exciting to have this level of engagement in the prep. Last year, we had a redistribution grant from the Art Center that, you know, changed it a bit. This year, we're back to doing it in our scrappy sort of grassroots manner, which is really exciting to see who is excited to help make Flags Day happen. And it's really sweet to engage more than just the three of us in these workshops and really get, you know, there's youth that come, there's, you know, artists that want to come and make their own costumes and flags. So we'll have extra flags available if you want to come to Flags Day on Friday, June 14th. We're meeting at Riverfront Park in downtown Troy, and we'll have extra flags, but you're more than welcome to express yourself creatively and make your own plastic creation to bring along in our procession.
Perfect. That was my next question. In the minute we have left is, you know, when and where is it? And is there somewhere people can go to find out more and get involved?
Yeah, a couple things. We'll meet at 5:30 this coming Friday, the 14th, at Riverfront Park, and we'll aim to start processing around town at 6. You know, as we said, there's a huge band, so if you miss us at 6, you can probably listen for us somewhere in the downtown and find us and jump in. And we'll process till around 7:30. We have a website, flagsday.org, with 3 S's.
And I'll just say, also this year we're having an after party. There will be not only the 20-piece band, Funk Brass Band, but there'll be another band playing called Brasskill from down the in Hudson. And you need to RSVP for that party. So if you're interested in coming to the Flags Day party, you just need to leave a voicemail at 518-328-4799. And we'll get you the details of where that after party is going to be. So there's, like, you know, the extended Flags Day celebration will go on into a show with these brass bands later on at night.
Awesome. Well, I could continue asking you more questions for a whole other length of an interview, but unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you both for joining me and doing this, and best of luck on Friday.
Thank you. Thank you, Lavender.
Hope to see you all in the streets.
For this week's Peace Bucket, we're talking to Heather Binno, who's a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and they helped organize buses from the Capital District to join the tens of thousands of people who went down, I believe, June 8th to the D.C. to surround the White House to protest the continuing assault on Gaza. So welcome, Heather, and you know, can you tell us a little bit about the day, why you went down, how many other people in the Capital District joined you?
Oh, definitely. Thanks, Mark. It was an amazing day on June 8th in DC, and we knew that it was going to be. The Party for Socialism and Liberation in Albany Hudson Valley has a history over the last 6 months of activity here, mobilizing buses for national mobilizations on the issues related to U.S. imperialism abroad and the liberation of Palestine, among many other issues. So this time around, with the Rafah invasion and the escalating violence and seeming really lack of practicality of a ceasefire resolution on the table last week, it was just a critical time to gather people into the nation's capital to really express the need for an arms embargo. Biden had declared that Rafah was a red line and that if Israel invaded, that there would be consequences and a refusal to send more weapons, but that did not take place. So this was a very unique action. We believe that it was going to be popular among people living here in the capital region in the Hudson Valley. So we wanted to make sure to charter a bus and get as many people out there as possible. In the end, we ended up almost filling the bus, and we had about 40 folks.
And you know, what was the police, you know, prison like down around the White House? Were they allowing you to exercise your First Amendment rights? Was there pushback?
So the action was very unique, as I had said. The day before, the National Park Service and maybe the Secret Service, I don't know which police were responsible for this, but actually barricaded the White House, put up a whole other row of fencing around the White House, using the excuse that in prior protests there had been fake blood thrown on the lawn of the White House, which was totally legitimate, I just want to add. The blood is on the hands of Joe Biden and everybody who works in that administration and in the Pentagon. So nothing was damaged by any protester related to defending Palestinian liberation, and adding these additional fences was really kind of extreme. It made the whole environment of the White House seem much more militarized, as is typical. And they installed those just the day before the action. As is typical, there were snipers on the White House roof. There was a helicopter. There are 10 police forces in Washington, D.C. So, and we had had meetings. This was a permitted action. So we were aware that there was going to be a police presence, but we also knew that we were highly organized. We had a 2-mile long red banner that needed to encircle the White House from the South Lawn all the way around to the north side, which is Lafayette Park, and back. And that was logistically challenging. One of the reasons why we really did need people from coming from all over the country. As it turned out, we had approximately 100,000 people converge on DC for this purpose of creating a red line. Most people there were entirely dressed in red, including everybody on our bus. We carried this, as I said, 2-mile banner that had names of the 40,000 people who have died, in addition to messages of solidarity. And there were a number of attendees that were chanting, had bullhorns, carried drums. And it was just an extremely lively event. So certainly, even though there was a police presence, there was no success in shutting down our First Amendment freedoms. We were intent on doing that. And there were really buses from all over the country. I will say we came in, we arrived just after a bus from Des Moines, Iowa, that had left at 3 p.m. on June 7th and was sold out. So there is real ire among young people, families, including myself and my kids, about the fact that this country, the government that we live under, continues to perpetrate a genocide by sending weapons and supporting this genocide that's taking place in Palestine.
Now, there have been two, you know, major recent developments. One was the so-called, release of hostages by the IDF resulted 4 hostages being released, but several hundred Palestinians, mainly civilians, being killed. And then also the Biden administration has floated, you know, a ceasefire resolution. How did the people at the protest react to those developments?
Sadly, the attack on the refugee camp took place during the action. Yeah, and how, what better proof? I didn't get to the second part of the action, but the second part of the action was a People's Court of Justice that tried Netanyahu, other members of his war cabinet, Biden, Blinken, other members of Biden's war cabinet, for crimes against humanity. And we had testimony from Palestinian families about what they had experienced, just extreme, really moving testimony about the terror that people are facing. So as we're doing this, this is when the news is coming out about the attack on the refugee camp where over 200 are killed. And just proving the point about how truly this is not a war, this is a genocide. It's an attack on a people without a military that is creating just essentially just a national liberation struggle. So that, while it was a very sad to hear that news. It was all part of what the reason why we were there. In terms of the ceasefire resolution, that took place, it was adopted by the UN Security Council after the action on the 8th. And one aspect is that it emboldens the forces that came together on the 8th, because we are really putting international pressure on this government. Now, even Israel says that this ceasefire resolution essentially supports its war plans. So, in fact, is not a permanent ceasefire. It was not the demand of the 100,000 and more people in Washington, D.C. We demand a permanent ceasefire. In fact, one of the chants was no two states, we want 48.
Now we have just over a minute left. So what's the next step, both at the national level, but here in the Capital District, in the last 60 seconds?
We have to continue to escalate. And what we're doing here in PSL is continuing to do that by showing films. We've been showing films at all of the libraries in the city of Albany and also some locations in Troy about Palestine, about the history, and about the movement. The other thing that we're doing is we're continuing to mobilize for national mobilizations. We always do share what we're doing on our Instagram, which is at PSL Albany. But also we work very closely in coalition with the Palestinian Rights Committee of Upper Hudson Valley, and that's at PRC Albany. So we are going to be busy this summer making sure that the world hears the demand for liberation of Palestine.
Thank you very much, Heather Bineau, Party for Socialism and Liberation. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk.
Next, we hear from Columbia County-based composer, drummer, sometimes band leader Bobby Previtt, here teaming up with Ryan Anderson on the 2023 album Double Trouble. This song is Mumbly Peg. We'll be right back.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And now we come to this impasse with the Attorney General himself, who refuses to comply.
House Speaker Mike Johnson rejected claims of hypocrisy and comparisons between Republicans who refused to testify for the January 6th committee and Attorney General Merrick Garland, who declined to turn over audio files of President Joe Biden's interview in his classified documents case. Johnson insists the situations are different. House Republicans voted to hold Garland in contempt of Congress. It's unlikely the Justice Department, which Garland oversees, will prosecute him. After President Biden's son, Hunter, was found guilty on all three charges related to the purchase of a gun while being addicted to drugs, the White House hasn't ruled out commuting his sentence. He could face a maximum penalty of 25 years in prison and a $750,000 fine. Meanwhile, California Congressman Pete Aguilar says Democrats stand by the justice system.
Hunter Biden sat before a jury of his peers. A verdict was rendered. And House Democrats believe in the rule of law.
Republican Congressman Andy Ogles of Tennessee suggested to Fox News that Hunter Biden's conviction could pave the way for former First Lady Michelle Obama to launch a bid for the White House.
It also creates an opening for Democrats to slip someone like Michelle Obama in here. The Biden family can say, hey, we're going to take care of our house, we're going to take care of our son, and then allow Michelle Obama to come in and run.
The former first lady has expressed repeatedly that she isn't interested in the job and fully supports Joe Biden. Senate Democrats plan to bring a bill to the floor today to provide federal protections for in vitro fertilization. While Republicans argue they support IVF, they tried and failed to introduce their own bill Wednesday, which would ban states from access to Medicaid funding if they ban IVF services. Democratic Senator Patty Murray calls it purely PR.
Every single Republican needs to answer clearly for the record. Do you want our laws to protect IVF, or do you want laws that say frozen embryos have the same rights as living, breathing human beings? You cannot have both.
The Democrats' bill is also expected to fail. This comes on the heels of the Southern Baptist Convention, the country's largest and most politically influential Protestant denomination, voting to oppose IVF. The ages of both presidential frontrunners have drawn extra attention, and in North Dakota, voters this week embraced setting age limits for members of Congress, although one expert has doubts. Psychology professor Elizabeth Kensinger is a member of Boston College's research group on aging.
And in fact, the science might suggest that there are some things that an 80-year-old might be doing better than a 60-year-old or a 40-year-old.
She adds this includes being able to see the big picture on major issues and regulating emotions more effectively. Backers of the age limit say their plan is a common-sense approach in response to public polling that favors such requirements. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Amendment 6, a repeal of Florida's public funding of elections option, faces voters on November 5th. Such small donor matching systems help candidates outside the political machine structure to compete and can help limit special interest influence. Voters passed a 1998 constitutional amendment creating a method of public financing for campaigns for statewide office and affirmed it again in 2010. Gubernatorial candidates must raise $150,000 in $250 amounts, which the state matches 2-to-1 or 1-to-1 above the threshold. The matching threshold for cabinet candidates is $100,000. Taking public money also requires adherence to spending limits, which in 2022 were over $30.28 million for governor and lieutenant governor, about $2 per registered voter. For attorney general and other cabinet offices, the cost was about $1 per voter. The Miami Herald reports that since 2010, $33 million in matching campaign funding has been spent. Amy Keith of Common Cause Florida said in a March statement, "Let's be clear, seeking to repeal laws that address this issue of special interests and big campaign donors is a step backwards. It silences the voices of everyday Floridians and gives favor to the wealthy to corrupt our politics." Find out more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, June 13th. Local early morning temperatures range from 44 degrees in Steventown to 53 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 60 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. Today is going to be mostly sunny and gets a bit warm. A high of 85 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight temperatures dip to 66 degrees. Dew points, yes, that magic word is back. Dew points catch up to those temperatures, so it will be room temperature, but that room is in a swamp, so air conditioners will likely be running. Tomorrow will be stormy, especially in the afternoon, and we get a high of 79 lingering most of the day. Overnight, temperatures fall to 58 degrees. Dew points follow, so it will be muggy. Saturday, it's going to be dry, sunny, with a high of 75 degrees, so get out there and have some fun. Sunday, same deal, high of 78. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:57 a.m., high tide at 8:56 a.m., low tide again at 3:42 p.m., and high tide once again at 9:43 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 8:18 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:15 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are currently at 10%, although that number's been jumping around, so it might reach as far as 20% today. Plasma winds will be slow at 350 kilometers per second with a thin density of 2 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair below 60 MHz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 145. And this has been The Better Weather for Thursday, June 13th, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Next, we hear 2023 radio art from Chicago-based artist Holly Palumbo. Fans of the band Belle and Sebastian will certainly recognize a melody in Firedrake Jammer from her 2023 album Radio and My Voice. Hudson's Rebecca Borer has an audio project called Rager and a 2023 album called Presence is a Present. This is Light the Candle from Rager on the radio.
Over a waterfall and came to Nothing.